Hello, everybody. Mariner here, and welcome to Net That Hole for game week 20, which takes us out of this godforsaken year, or my godforsaken year, anyway. We've just got one guest tonight. It's not one of the regulars, but look, this is the way I'm going to frame this, guys. I am going to steer the ship, but you forget about me navigating my way through FPL this season because I've virtually given up. So the person who's going to steer it is me. But the person who's going to give me the directions and give you the directions today is Craig from the Man On Pod. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. I don't know if I'm a good advocate for giving directions. My rank isn't going that well, to be honest. I'm sure I'm doing a bit better than some, but it's not one of my high-flying seasons. I'm used to being sort of top 100k by now. I'm nowhere near that. So it's a challenge for all of us, Chris.
Mate, it's challenging times. I can't break out of that. It's almost like, yeah, I can't break out of that sort of like little zone of about 200,000. I'm stuck in it, you know, some just drifting around a million, like, you know, like becalmed, you know, there's no wind for the sails. Do you know what I mean? It's just tiring. It's getting really depressing, quite frankly.
Well, I think it's time to shake it up a little bit. Obviously, we get into that point. Obviously, Haaland is causing managers problems. Will he be back? Won't he be back? Then we've got Salah and Son about to bugger off. So it feels like a time when the template might break a little bit. I think people will go in different directions here. Will they spend the money in defence? Will they keep the money in the bank? Will they change the free up front? All these sorts of questions that are coming out now. So I think if there is a chance to make sort of rapid gains, I think we're approaching that part of the season, the next sort of 5-6 game weeks, where is it probably a chance to be a little bit different?
I don't know who it was. Someone in the Discord said, "Hey, Chris, you're brilliant. You've got Gusto's points finally." And I went, "No, I'm sorry, he's on the bench."
He's probably landed with the best 4 million defender for the next batch of games by accident in your case. But I think you're probably on the right player now. If I had my way, if I was wildcarding this week and I had a fifth defender around 4 million, I think it'd be him now. So you've done well to hold it.
Anyway, what we're going to do, I see Gabe's just turned up. What we're going to do now is we're actually going to do a philosophy, but you're going to do it. You sent a message earlier on and said, "Shall I do a philosophy, Chris?" And I just went, "No." And you went, "Oh, I bet you thought, oh, what's this?" But then I misread it because I was actually in the middle of trying to hit a ball into a lake on a golf course. I managed it just shortly after that. But yeah, I actually misread your thing. So anyway, I decided it was a good idea that you do a philosophy. So anyway, we couldn't edit Gabe's slides because he never sent us it. So what I've done is I'm doing it this way, right? So there we go. There is the quote. Over to you.
I thought it ticked three boxes, this, Chris. One, it ticked your box a bit on the golf course. I thought you might be in the lake chasing after your golf ball. So
I was, so that's about right. Yeah.
I thought it ticked a box about your constant banter with Gabe about sitting on a toilet. And it could be used as a way of don't fall down the toilet. Make sure you get out again. And three, I think we're at that point of the season now where, as you said, you're lingering around a certain rank. I think the template is fairly steady in a lot of teams' cases now. And I think it's very easy to keep making what look like template moves. And this is when you don't gain. This is where you drown effectively. You stay where you are. You maybe sink a little bit because you do have to make some decisions, maybe go against the template a little bit. And I just mentioned, obviously, 2 minutes ago or so about we're now at that perfect time of the season, I think, with Salah and Son going in the next 2 weeks. Do we spend that money replacing those two as much as we can, like for like? Do we now change the template and go to three up front, where we've got the likes of Nkunku coming back? We've got Solanke, Watkins in form, Alvarez is around, Darwin, things like that. Do you spend the money on defence or something now? I feel like now is the time to sort of switch it up a little bit, I say.
Change. So you're going to read it. We need to read it out for the podcast. So let's read it out. I'll let you read it out and then I'm going to respond.
Okay, so the quote is, "You don't drown by falling in the water, you drown by staying there." It's a quote by Edwin Louis Cole. I think it's quite appropriate for all three things. Your golf course, Gabe sitting on the toilet and the fact that FPL right now it's become a bit of a template game. So apparently
this guy was a bit of a Christian. Was he a Christian missionary? Did you actually look up who he was?
Oh, no, I didn't look at that. No, I'm not.
I have to do that because I have to do that. So, you know, I'm just very interested to know what positions we're looking at transferring this week. Did you get that?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, dear me. Oh, I'm so rude, you see. I automatically think of sex. Sorry. But anyway, by the by, you don't drown by falling in the water. You drown by staying there. Well, it depends what temperature the waters is, right? Because if it's a decent temperature, you're actually all right for a while, unless you get eaten by a shark. But generally speaking, from my side of it, you know, I think, you know, if you're in the water too long, if it's too hot, you'll burn. You'll scald yourself, which is a bit like me with FPL this season, I think, because I've left myself too long with certain problems. And alternatively, if you react too quickly and jump straight out when you don't need to, you've also got a problem, haven't you? So I reckon I could question this one. I like how you've done it. I like the way you've done it, but I can't quite be sure whether I agree with it or disagree with it. But you know what? That's quite normal because I have absolutely no idea, and I have the least amount of philosophy in my body than anyone on this planet. So, you know, it's quite usual for the haulers just normally to be falling around laughing right now, listening to me just ranting and shaking my head. But anyway, the guy's sat on the toilet. I was going to say that's where I've been most of Christmas, but that's another story. Let's keep going. So we'll say hello to a few people, but what we'll do is we'll get straight into the matchups. We want to be in and out, ideally within the hour. We want to make this nice and, you know, nice and bite-sized for everybody just to come in, grab a little bit of FPL, and then get on with their Christmas holidays if you are lucky enough still to be on Christmas break. So thank you for that one, Craig. Good attempt. You're still, you know, as I say, no chance for me understanding it, but perhaps other people have. So let's dive in. 10 games. The first one is Luton against Chelsea, Craig. So what I'll do is I'm just going to flick between the matchups, which are just my matchups this week, by the way, everybody, because we haven't got games. So there we go. So obviously the team what we are interested in really here is only Chelsea. I mentioned my gusto issue this weekend. But looking at the matchups, Craig, and I'll run through them and I'll let you respond is the best bet, you know, which are the best, you know, on the basis of the matchups, but also just your general gut feeling as, you know, buy, sell, hold, you know, who's your top targets, I think, for the next few weeks. But Chelsea's fixture difficulty is very good for this game, 2.9, even away at Luton. And Luton aren't bad, generally speaking, at Kenilworth Road. Interesting enough, defensively, Chelsea's slightly negative, minus 0.4. Zonal matchups, 4.3 through the middle for Chelsea, pretty good, 3.3 either side. XG matchup for Chelsea, 1.9, I think that's about third or fourth best, and big chances three. Luton's XG matchup 1.4, Craig. Where do you see this one going? And more to the point, you mentioned gusto. Would you bring him in this week on the back of that matchup?
I think it's viable. Like my team at the moment has got two weak defenders. It's got Lascelles in it, who's obviously now, we don't even know if he's going to start moving forward with Shearer and Botman and stuff back. And I've still got Charlie Taylor as my budget defender. So I'd like to improve one of those, and gusto is one option. So I do think he's the best defender now. The important thing I think for him is that he plays in the Chelsea attacking line, where a lot of defenders maybe invert into midfield or move into the back three and things like that. Gusto is one of those that plays in the attacking line, which obviously gives him more chance for attacking returns. So just for that reason, I think, and with no Reece James obviously as well, his minutes are better. I'm not saying he will play every game. We've still got the Sassy and people like that can play games at right back. But yeah, I would have him sort of towards the top of my list of a transfer target if you can get there. I'm sure we'll get to it later, but people might be looking at midfield moves this week. But bearing in mind, you've already got Salah and Son to maybe move on in the next couple of weeks. I'd probably wait. If you want a midfielder, if you want a Richarlison, if you want someone like that, a Bowen, you might as well wait another week and then get them as your replacement for Salah and Son. I wouldn't be faffing around, I don't think, in midfield now. A striker option, I think, is viable again if you want to convert to three strikers now. I think you could do that. And Nkunku's obviously is an option. He started yesterday.
Yes, I was going to mention him because, I mean, that's a very nice matchup. 4.3 for the central region. Three big chances as well, Chelsea expected to get. I mean, you'd think that if he is going to start, he's going to get one, at least one of those. And he is a habit. You know, certainly scored already. I've hardly seen a single ball being kicked all Christmas period, quite frankly, if I'd be brutally frank. But, you know, Gabe waxes lyrical about Cook from his time in the Bundesliga.
The problem. It's only sort of, there's not a lot of turnaround, is there, from the game against Palace yesterday compared to this one. Is he sort of fit enough yet to play, to start two games that close together? My gut feeling is the bench. Sterling and Palmer obviously not available for this after being banned. But I wouldn't write off Chelsea now. I've seen quite a lot of the game from yesterday against Palace, and they were a lot better, actually, in quite a lot of the game. I thought their attacking structure was generally better. I think the balance of the team was generally better. They played more like a team yesterday. There were still some issues, I thought, around their pressing. They gave Crystal Palace too much time on the ball to get out and too much ease of possession getting out of defence. But I think Luton don't really have the players to sort of take advantage of that in the way that Palace maybe did. So if Chelsea can start passing the ball better, sustaining pressure in good areas of the pitch, and they end up with Palmer and Nkunku on the pitch together, sort of double creativity, which they don't tend to have all that much, then I kind of feel like it's not a bad time to invest in Chelsea. I think the issue is with Nkunku, you probably want another two games of evidence, really, and some more security around these minutes. I don't think it's a move you make now, unfortunately, even though this fixture's quite a good one for Chelsea attack. The issue for me is I've got eight good attackers this week. So all of my eight attackers, in theory, I want to play them all.
Yes, but you can't. That's a, no. I think that's a little bit of a festive problem, isn't it? Because everyone's thinking I'm expecting rotation, so I may as well just load my team up and hope for the best. And then what happens is they all bloody play and they come on for a couple of bloody minutes here or there. And then you end up feeling that perennial problem of always leaving points on the bench. But yeah, I think I tend to agree with you, just closing on this one and so we can move on. I think Nkunku maybe is a week or two too early, given the fact I think they might, you know, is he gonna get some rest? Although, like you say, Sterling suspended, right? Palmer will obviously be coming back in. Palmer's coming back in, of course, after he's served his suspension. I thought he was still suspended. I noticed he was still flagged, so maybe that's just they've not took that off yet. But yeah, the gusto point's an interesting one again, because if you look very quickly, if we just put the matchups back on, you know, like you say, if you're saying attacking wise, then yeah, fair enough. Just not quite sure they're going to keep a clean sheet, but anyway, there we go. Yeah, let's keep going. So Aston Villa against Burnley. So let me just write the timestamps down to try and save a bit of time later. So Aston Villa and Burnley. Aston Villa, the wheels coming off, mate.
It's not unexpected from my side. I think we're so reliant on ball progression from defence. Under Gerrard last year, when we was playing Mings at the back and things like that, the big problem we had was progressing the ball into midfield. Our midfielders were all coming so deep. And we addressed that with playing Pau Torres. He's obviously been unavailable for the last two games. Boubacar Kamara has been unavailable for the last two games. And those two players combined have really shackled us. With Torres getting the ball into midfield and Kamara just being a busybody in that phase of the pitch. In some ways, I think they're two of our most important players and we've lost them both together. We've got a midfield of four, I would say, of Kamara and Luiz in midfield and Torres and Konsa, the two centre-backs. I think if you're without two of those four, I think we have big problems. And against Man United, it was without three of those four. So there's still issues. Torres could be back for this. He was on the bench against Man United, so maybe he'll be fit enough to start here. Kamara's got one game of his ban left, so he isn't back. I'm not that hopeful that Villa win this. I don't think Burnley are as bad as maybe what other people do. They're just a bit... They remind me of sort of the way I would manage Football Manager team. You go out and buy a load of sort of wonder kid 19-year-olds from around the world and then try and sort of get them all in the team, don't they? And I think that Burnley are a little bit like that. They've got all these talented players that you haven't heard of. And I'm sure in the next 4 or 5 years, some of them will become really good footballers. And at the moment,
probably
they're just
not. Probably not feeling. Burnley, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, they're just a bit weak, a bit sort of. Yeah. But they could cause us problems.
I mean, matchups don't suggest it. Matchups really like you're both at home and both with respect to attack 2.9 and defence 2.5. And, you know, like it's the proverbial traffic light, really. Burnley are bright red. Your zonal matchups are good as well. Slightly better on the right compared to the left, but central standing out 4.3. XG 1.9, big chances 2.8, and 11.2 shots in the box, 6.3 shots on target. I mean, you'd like to think that Ollie Watkins might turn up a bit.
Well, but we've got a striker who likes to miss a load of chances, and we've got a goalkeeper in Trafford who likes to make quite a lot of saves. I think it's Liverpool. He made about 7 saves in the first 20 minutes.
He did. Yeah, he did. He did. But the thing is with him, I think, is he's only a little. He only looks quite small to me.
Yeah.
I think people tend to stand the ball up, you know, and you know, put the ball underneath his crossbar, and you know, there's ways and means of getting at them, I think. But Watkins for me is just a bit annoying right now. I also still own Diaby, and you know, this is a real problem for me right now. Do I play him this week, or is he going to get rested again? Is he still going to get benched, or do you think he might get a game?
Yeah, he might start this. He didn't start the last game. So if there's going to be a bit of rotation, Villa obviously looking for some sort of reaction after 1 point in 2 games. I think it's feasible we could start this game, yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll play him then. Question from Nick Khan. Would you bring in a Villa defender or a City defender this week for Livramento, mate?
Oh, dear. I wouldn't trust either of them to keep a clean sheet in this game week, particularly. I'd rather... The defence is where I need to make a transfer, really. And I'm still waiting for more information on Botman. Not that about any sort of injury or anything, but I just want him to get more secure minutes and Newcastle's fixtures to get better. But I think he's the fourth defender to get rather than a Pau Torres or a Konsa. I think if you can get the double Arsenal defence and Porro, I quite like that right now. Trippier and Trent obviously appeal as well. If not, I think I would probably get Gusto in now if I was thinking about making a defender for Livramento. I think I'd rather have Gusto right now and save the money rather than getting a Konsa or a Torres, I think.
Just whilst we're on this defensive point, there was a question from Don Black Dragon in the Discord. We may as well cover it whilst we just mentioned Trippier. Trippier's last returns were in game week 11 and then game week 14. Next three fixtures are tough. Hold or sell for TAA or Van Dijk, or Virgil van Dijk? I have to say, as a Trippier owner, he's very frustrated right now. Very frustrated. He's expensive, and he does. I've also felt that. So I think this defensive topic is quite an interesting one, right? At this minute.
Yeah, I think bearing in mind what's about to happen, if you own Salah and Son, they're both about to leave. You may have other players who are just about to leave as well. It might not just be them two. Then you've got all this scenario around when will Haaland come back? All these things require transfers, right? The midfielders to sell, Haaland maybe to buy. Is Trippier really a pressing problem in the sense you don't need the money? I'm not saying he's performing well. I'm not saying his numbers are going to get any better in the next couple of weeks. But there's not really any defenders that are doing well, really. I don't think. You could argue Trent is, but Liverpool's fixtures are about to get worse as well. Trippier did well when Newcastle had good games. And when the fixtures got rough, his points dried up a little bit. I don't think he's a big enough issue to warrant selling, given what other transfers we might need to make in the next couple of weeks.
Fair enough. Yep. Let's keep going. The next one, Crystal Palace against Brentford, mate. So, not sure we actually... Well, I still have that flecking problem.
Yeah, same.
Trying to... you know, I thought, oh, that's good, he hadn't played. 0 points.
I benched him, luckily, but I had the Bravka instead. He let 3 goals in at home to Nottingham Forest. I don't know if that's much better.
it's just so bad. And I mean, look, Crystal Palace at home against Brentford. I mean, the matchups don't suggest much. I've ringed the Crystal Palace matchup, really, given the fact they're at home. But very neutral. You know, minus 0.3 for attack, minus 0.4 for defence. Brentford slightly better. Really nothing much on the zonal slight for the Palace left-hand side, 3.8. But nothing much, 8. Shots in the box, 8.7. Against 7.7, and XG's above 1.4. Match-up size. Do we own any? I mean, apart from Flecken, quite frankly. I mean, if anybody, have we got any of these players actually in a team? And more to the point, is there anyone? There's one player who is returning week on week right now for Crystal Palace, and that's Olise.
Yeah, I think
only
he's
one. Yeah.
I think I saw a question on the Discord around midfielders, 6 million or less. He's definitely one in that discussion right now. He's their talisman player, isn't he? Zaha's obviously not there anymore. Yes. He's injured. So he's on penalties. Yeah. Most of the attacks go through him. Similar sort of player to Pedro Neto in that sense. An average sort of mid-table team that he's the player everything goes through. And we saw what Neto did. His run carried on for weeks and months, didn't it, before he got injured. Are we going to get something similar from Olise? I don't hate the pick. If you're looking for sort of a midfielder around that price point.
Yeah, we'll have to have a look at is the longer term matchups a little bit later and then see if we still let's just put his name in the hat for that topic and then let's see the longer term matchup. So again, whether I would fall over myself to bring him in this week remains to be seen with that matchup. But saying that, Brentford, you know, right now, I mean, they're a couple of weeks away from Tony back, aren't they?
Yeah, one point from Brentford, I think. If you look at their recent matches, I think there is a bit of a rough correlation, at least. Not in great detail here, but a rough correlation that when they play teams who press well, they struggle. And when they play teams that press quite passively, they do okay. So they lost to Wolves, really good pressing team. They lost to Aston Villa, but they was winning that game until the red card. Villa don't press very well, so there was a head in that game against a team that don't press. Sheffield United was a coin flip game. I think Brentford had the better of it, couldn't score. Sheffield United obviously hit them on the break a little bit and did score. Brighton pressed well, they beat Brentford. Brentford did beat Luton. So I think in the last sort of 7-8 game weeks, I think there is some analysis that can be made that if they play a team that pressed really well, they struggle. If they play a team that pressed passively, they tend to do quite well. And Crystal Palace are a passive pressing team. So if based on the last 7-8 game weeks, this could be a game that suits Brentford. Are they defensively good enough to keep someone like Olise quiet? Who knows? But I think there's enough in it for me at a time when I haven't really got a clear goalkeeper pick this week that I think I'm going to play Flecken in this game because I think there's sort of a 40% chance or so they'll keep a clean sheet, which is probably more than what Newcastle have got against Liverpool in my case. So I'm going to pick him, but maybe he's one to move on. Well, they've got a double game week probably coming up soon, haven't they, Brentford? So you have to keep him till then.
Yeah. There's sort of like rumours. I've seen people are sort of like saying, oh, look, that fixture's in January. It's down there, but there's just no date there. But it's so everyone's sort of like trying to clutch straws to say this is going to happen in January. So, you know, Tony straight in double game week, eh? Champion at the bit.
Well, it is another reason to maybe adjust now, whether it's this week. So I had Archer, I sold him for Solanke last week. So I've now got Solanke, Watkins and Alvarez as my front three. But with Nkunku coming back, with Tony coming back, there's clearly five strikers at least there. Maybe throw Darwin in. I think there's a case now. There's enough strikers. There's enough strikers now. I think there's an argument you play three up front. With Salah and Son going, there's not any midfielders, understandably, that sort of match their output. So do we need five midfielders still when we've lost the two best midfielders in the game, as I view it? I think there's an argument that you move the budget around and maybe put a cheap midfielder in and go three up front. And if we are going to do
I mean, Neto's due back, isn't he? Soon, he's just about ready. Again, is he about 5.5? Is he a bit more? I don't know if he's dropped back a bit. But, I mean, look, for me, I just think there's obviously, we've already got, most of us own Gordon, God help us. But, and, you know, most of us have got Palmer now. So you've got probably two already fairly cheap midfielders. So money's really no object until you've got to try and get Salah back in, right, I think, realistically, which is what, going to be around game week 25-ish? Is that roughly what we're expecting for them?
Yeah, I think he could be back by then. But if Liverpool reach the Carabao Cup final, then they'll blank, I think he's 26. If Liverpool, then them or their opponent in game week 29 reach the FA Cup quarterfinals, that's a blank. So is it feasible you go without Salah till maybe game week 30 in your second wild card now? Because you might only play two game weeks in the next nine or something. And is it worth tearing your team apart or holding so much budget?
No, I personally think you've got to spend it. Anyway, that's just me. Right. So let's move on. And the next one we're going to look at is Manchester City against Sheffield United.
Is this the biggest mismatch in your numbers?
It could be, not quite actually. But I think I'm going to pop them up in a minute. But the first thing I'm going to say here is that what we've been seeing in recent months with Manchester City at home is their numbers. The underlying numbers are not that great. They win games at home, but they don't tend to have to create the chances like they are creating them away from home. Now, obviously now, I'm just building up to the crescendo of putting these things on the screen, it's Sheffield United. And they do leak chances, lots of chances. And as a result, Manchester City's fixture difficulty is quite high, 3.2 for attack and 3 for defence as well. So you're playing them all. If you're stacked with Manchester City, you're going to play them all here for sure. Left 4.2, central 4.1, right only 3.4. But look, when Manchester City get 3.2 big chances and 10.1 shots in the box and 6.3 shots on target on a matchup, I think you know where this is going. And this could be a whacking, in my opinion.
Shots in the box number, though. There's about 5 teams better than them here, aren't they? You'd expect at home to the worst team in the league. And
yeah, I know. And this is, but the big chances are quite high, are the highest. So what they're doing is they're not creating that many, Sheffield United conceding a lots of big chances here as well. But this is the point we've been seeing with Manchester City away from home. The numbers, the matchups tend to be better away from home than they are at home. But even then, these are better. And remember, it's Manchester City. The issue is Haaland back? That $1 million question, right?
Nah, they're going to save him now till January the 13th or whatever it is, aren't they? What's the point in risking him for this game? You can have like 2 weeks off after this game. I think that was a quote from Pep as well. Basically said that they're not expecting him till January at the earliest. So, yeah, he's not back. The big talking point tactically for this game, I think after the weekend when they lost to Luton, Sheffield United, the manager was quite keen to comment that they didn't clear the 6-yard box very well. They got caught defending too deep, and Luton obviously just kept bombarding balls into the 6-yard box, and eventually it led to 2 own goals. You don't want to really do that against Man City, just allow them sort of easy access to the penalty box, because they may get goals there. And they're going to have 90% possession here, aren't they, Man City? They're going to suffocate Sheffield United on the edge of their own box. How many chances can they create? They've obviously got the likes of Foden, who's really good in tight spaces. Bernardo, who's really good in tight spaces. I think those two are going to be quite critical in this game, especially Foden. I think if he's playing as a number 10, I think a lot they'll use him as a bit of a board, I think, around the area to bounce balls off and try and little 1-2 link play and things like that around the area. That's going to be, I think he's the key player in this game for them. And
I do like Foden.
He's been good, Foden. He was good last night as well. So if you did want to make a midfield transfer this week and money's no object, I think he would be my number one priority, I think, for a midfield if I was going to get one. Bearing in mind that this fixture that got a double coming up and things like that. I'd quite like to own him this week.
Good call. I like that call, especially like you say, with the double game week coming up. And, you know, like you say, given the fact that he's a clever player, I suppose, and he just needs to get that, he just needs that run of games. Quite often, he's so stop-start with respect to his appearances for me. You know, it must be quite tricky, you know, just as an individual, you know, when you're playing to get, you see how Palmer's flourished at Chelsea by getting consistent starts, you know what I mean?
I think no one can deny how good of a footballer he is. I think the issue is, where do you play him? He hasn't got the pace to play out wide. He doesn't go both ways out wide. He's very left-footed, so he's not really a winger in that sense. You don't really play him as a number 10 because he doesn't really run a game like De Bruyne or Odegaard do, where they sort of get on the ball and really influence everything. He's just a very good technical player who's really good in tight spaces. So, but where do you play him? Do you play him as a number 8 and try and play maybe like Arsenal used to play Jack Wilshere? Do you play him as a number 10 and try and encourage him to take more of a lead in the game? I think, yeah, say no one questions his ability. He's just got quite a unique skill set that's actually quite hard to put in a position, is the way I view him. Yeah, so this might be an ideal scenario for him this game, though, as a number 10, I think.
Okay, so if you were to, say, pick Foden, right, what about defence? I mean, did I see Stones went off injured?
Really injured, yeah.
And another player I had my beady eye on, quite frankly. but yeah, so Stones is injured, right? Yeah, it's very tricky. You're not going to bring Kyle Walker in. Yeah,
Akanji's like 4.9, so at a time when we can have four or five good defenders, you can maybe put Akanji in there just because he's cheap. I think he'll play this game. I don't know what Diaz's status is. He was ill yesterday, so I don't know if he's back for this. But I don't hate the Akanji pick, as just you can have him there. If he doesn't play, you can just have him as a fourth defender almost. I think we can justify that this season.
Okay. So, cool. All right, let's keep going. Who's next? We have Wolves against Everton. Wolves, who all of a sudden have started to play. They were a bit boring last season, were they, to say the least? But they're coming up against Everton, who, quite frankly, have also turned a corner somewhat this season as well. This is an interesting one. There's not a lot to show on the matchup, so I've just ringed Wolves' fixture difficulty there, which is very neutral, -0.2. Everton's obviously there, very slightly positive. There's not a lot. If you look across, Craig, on either of those two lines, there's not a great deal. There's not a great deal for Everton. You know, there's very little in zonals, very little in the matchups, and the same for Wolves. It probably suggests a relatively low-scoring game, but it's a bit against what we've been seeing recently for these teams, isn't it? It doesn't really follow suit.
I think this is the hardest game of the week, the game week to call. I wouldn't be surprised with any of the three outcomes for this game. I wouldn't be confident in picking a winner in this. They're both examples of teams that are good tactically, that show what can be done, even if you've got slightly inferior players, if you've got good tactics. And I think it's always a question you ask, what's better, better players or better tactics? I would always argue better tactics are better. And I think these two teams are quite on it in terms of how they defend off the ball, how they match up man for man against teams. They sort of know the capabilities of their players. Everton play quite direct because they've got Calvert-Lewin and Decore, players like that playing in advanced positions who can run and be a nuisance. Wolves are probably a bit more technical than Everton. I'd probably expect Wolves to run the game a little bit more. I think I saw that Huang might be injured as well, which obviously would be a big loss to them.
Oh, is he?
Possibly. Yeah, that would be a loss to them. But I think he might be out. Don't quote me on that, though. Even though I've just said it on record on the pod. But double check that one. He might be out. Sarabia has come good. Another one. Again, his place in the team might not be around long term when Neto comes back. But I think he's like 4.7 at the moment and has had some quite nice numbers when he's been involved. So Wolves do have some difference makers, but I think, they'll lose a big sort of element of their attacking threat if they haven't got Huang. I don't think you buy from either of these two teams right now, and I think it's probably a one-all game would be my prediction.
Yes. Yeah, it's a tricky... I think I tend to agree with you, and also, of course, even if Huang is fit, he's gone. Because he's going for the Asia Cup, isn't he? So there's another one who's disappearing. So be interesting to see whether Neto just times his return around that. He's not far away, is he? And look, my team's called Neto that Hull, right? I would have to bring him in. At the moment he's fit, I'm just going to bring him in for shits and giggles.
I think there was rumours before the last game that he was going to be fit to make the squad. Now, he wasn't in the squad in the end, but that shows how close he must be that he was being spoken about that he was sort of in the discussions to be in the squad. So I wouldn't be surprised by game week sort of 21, 22 if he's around again. Yeah. And as you say, then he's an option.
Well, I'll be honest with you. The first time he's first return, is it? I'm just going to bring him in because he is very much a returner. Once he gets going, it's about getting going with him. It's what I've always found with Neto is that he's very patchy. He can go a long time blank. It might take him a while to get back after this injury. So, and again, we'll have a look at Wolves' fixtures longer run out in a few minutes when we get to that. But Once he starts, I think I'll bring him in. He is the talisman for them. Right, when he is fit, generally speaking.
The only problem is going to be if Wang's away, then who's he supplying for? He obviously, as a creative player, you need someone to create for. And if Wolves got anyone with that sort of skill set and attribute set that Wang's got, I haven't seen it yet, if I'm honest, from anyone else. So that's the worry with him. But the fixtures are very good for Wolves, I think, from 22 to 26 or something like that. I think they've got a nice run of games around then.
Okie dokie. Okie dokie. The next one then is Forest against Manchester United. Forest, who also, as I say, was moaning like hell about sacking Cooper, but all of a sudden have turned into a free scoring team. Are they going to continue it, Craig? What's your perspective whilst I just write down this timestamp?
Not impossible, because Man United don't press well. I think certainly in the first half against Villa, one of the problems that they had was that Villa just kept getting out because Man United's press wasn't races. And I think if you saw the Nottingham Forest third goal, particularly against Newcastle, Murillo just got given loads of time on the ball to then chip it over the top, and Chris Wood was running in behind. Now, the way Man United play, I could easily see a repeat of that sort of goal in this game, because Man United try and defend with a high line. They leave space in behind for runners. They don't put a lot of pressure on the ball. So if you've got someone who can sort of ping those passes from deeper, then it's feasible that a repeat of that sort of goal could happen in this game. I haven't seen enough of Nuno's Nottingham Forest yet to see exactly how they want to play. Obviously, under Cooper, they didn't like having the ball, really. They was quite happy to have 30% possession in a game. Now, that might improve now and probably changes my viewpoint and perspective on Forest. I'm normally quite sort of downgrading of them. I don't rate them. I haven't rated them up until now very highly. But Nuno is a far better manager, I think, than what they've had with Cooper and things like that. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they stepped up. They identified against Newcastle a clear weakness of putting a pacey winger against a slow fullback. So the manager's clearly sort of switched on in that sense, that you can identify where there's an edge to be had. The way Man United are playing right now, there's quite a lot of advantages to be gained if you know where to look. So,
yeah.
So I think Forest will probably win this based on what I saw from both teams in the last round of fixtures.
So, yeah, I mean, the zonals, everything, sorry, the fixture penalty, slight positive for Forest. But that's because probably because Manchester United have just been so bad. For both, so 0.8 for attack, 1 for defence. Left and central zones for Forest, 4.3, 3.8, Craig. And 11.1 shots in the box and 3.6 headers, Chris Wood.
Yeah, and who's he going to be up against here? Varane? I'm not sure Man United are playing. Is it Varane and Evans still, I think, isn't it, at the moment?
I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I have to rely on some of the Manchester United fans in the podders here. Podner will tell us all about it. Normally, I'm chuckling away about Manchester United, but I've been told not to by everybody else. But no, Podner will probably tell us who's. But I mean, that central matchup probably suggests something maybe for Chris Wood. Chris Wood's in form now. He's the form striker. 5 returns in the last 2, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't see him. His main threat being running in behind either, which is what happened against.
Yeah, I didn't think he can run.
Well, I still don't think he can run. Having watched him run in behind, he still didn't look like he looked like one of those bad actors in a film. Do you know when you see the film when people are running and it's still even staged? That's what Chris Wood was running like. I thought it was being shot at by someone in a car.
He'll have to be the butt of all jokes going forward. I mean, we've already got the Tin Man in Dan Byrne. Well, we're going to have to give Chris Wood maybe call him Trunk. Yeah, Tree Trunk. Rather than Wood, maybe that's more appropriate. It's like one of these tree trunks running around. You see him in the marathon, don't you? Running a marathon as a tree trunk. You see him?
He definitely looked like he'd been slowed down. I thought I was watching a slow motion scene or something. Crazy. It took his chance really well when he got it.
But Podner's got home. He said, "You never listened to me about Manchester United." Come on, Podner, we're listening to you now. Come on, you've got to tell us. Tell us whether this matchup's got any legs. Tell us whether this Chris Wood matchup's got some legs, mate. You know, be honest.
Are you thinking about any other United players, Chris? Because, say, if I end up moving to...
No, I've contemplated them for weeks. I had Rashford and bloody Fernandes at the start of the season and got my bloody fingers burnt with that. I tell you, the player I really like, but he's injured again, is Luke Shaw. I've always got a little thing about Luke Shaw. I've had him quite often, many times in international fantasy and things like that. I've always done really well out of him. And I always, for that reason, I quite like Luke Shaw. But, I mean, I looked at Garnacho pre-season. Got a couple of returns this week, didn't he? But I don't know. What about you? Have you contemplated anyone?
If I do end up moving to 3-4-3 and going with the three strikers, obviously you need an eighth attacker then in midfield. And I kind of feel like he's the ideal one right now. What's his price? 4.8 or something?
Yeah, about that.
I'd rather play that than play like 4.4 for McAtee or something like that. I think you could pay 4.8 for Garnacho, use him as your eighth attacker, bench him most weeks if you had to play him in a week. Obviously, I don't think you'd have a problem playing Garnacho. He's got some attacking threat. His underlying numbers are okay. So he's the one I've kind of got my eye on. Should I want to downgrade to a sort of a cheaper eighth attacker? I've just seen Podner mention Elanga. He was the one that caused Dan Byrne all the grief the weekend just by constantly running in behind and against the high line. I don't know if Man United's
He's on the left. Is he playing on the left side? Is he playing down that left?
He can play either side. Elanga? He played on the right. He played on the right the weekend. I don't think they'll play him against Wan-Bissaka because obviously Wan-Bissaka's one of the better right-sided fullbacks. So you could argue, could he run in behind Luke Shaw or something like that? Maybe Luke Shaw's not rapidly quick, right? They could stretch.
I think he's injured. Is he injured? I think he might be. But just a few comments here. Stewie Bryan, don't get their assets. Don't target them. Simple. Ignatius, nah, going down the United defence is like buying poison. Okay, fair enough.
No defender for me.
Colm, I'll whisper it quietly. Hoyland is in my current wildcard draft. He will probably come out for Haaland when he's back fully fit, not just off the bench. Interesting. So there is some little discussions going on about, just in the little background about Manchester United. This moment in time, it's a bit early. I've not got a lot of love for them personally.
I think Haaland's conversion rate or Hoyland's conversion rate of big chances is worse than Darwin Núñez. So until that improves, I don't think I'll be getting him in.
Christ alive.
I think he scored 1 in 10 or something. So, yeah, not on an elite finish.
That's like comparing the Titanic with Lusitania. Jesus Christ. I mean, honestly, man, I mean, look, as sure as eggs are eggs, the moment you take out bloody Darwin, he scores, doesn't he? It's just typical. But that's just FPL. I mean, I couldn't wait to sell him. Couldn't wait. Right. Where are we? Fulham against Arsenal. So here's another one. This is another interesting one, I think, because Fulham just recently at home been rather free scoring, haven't they? But they haven't come up against Arsenal and Arsenal's defence particularly. What's your take on this whilst I just get ready for the get the matchups ready to show you?
My take is it should be a comfortable Arsenal win. I don't particularly rate Fulham. I know they've had a little bit of a renaissance for a couple of weeks. Scored battered West Ham, didn't they? I think they put four or five past someone else. I don't know who's available. I think they're really lacking Willian and Jimenez. They seem to be against Bournemouth. I thought they were fairly toothless and looked well off the pace in that game. Willian in particular, I thought, was a big loss in terms of his creativity. I just think Arsenal will control this game quite comfortably. And I'd probably trust them to take a couple of their chances. So I think this has got the hallmarks of a comfortable Arsenal win.
I'm just going to pee on your parade, mate, because it doesn't look like it. It really doesn't look like it. Now, look, I know that I'm very warm on Arsenal defence right now. They've been a butt of my jokes for a few seasons, actually, as Neiman knows. But looking at these matchups, you know, slight negative for both defences, or for both attacks, minus 0.6 for Arsenal, minus 0.3 for Fulham. Nothing in the zonals, I mean, is this a great game for Saka this week? 3.1 matchup on the right, nothing for Fulham. Everything else, XG, 1.1 Arsenal, 1.5 Fulham. There's nothing. It's very quiet. It's, you know, it doesn't jump out as a great matchup. You'd automatically assume, oh, Arsenal at Fulham, that sounds great. But you know what? I'm not sure it is.
It's just whether Arsenal can break through. Fulham, to me, are a team that like defending quite deep, so they won't give loads of space in behind. So have Arsenal got the players to play sort of in front of that, with Paulinho sat there as well, obviously offering that protection? Have Arsenal got the players that can play through that? The likes of Odegaard sort of playing a bit deeper and is taking on a more creative role right now. It feels like a Saka game to me. I think Arsenal will rely on him and give him a lot of the ball to try and make something happen. Maybe look for more of those sort of deeper crosses for someone like Havertz, or those sorts of runs towards the back post that Havertz has been making. I have to apologise. I haven't looked at who's available for this game. I know that I don't know what he's like at the moment for availability, Havertz. I'm not sure if he's going to be available for this, but I think that could be quite a nice sort of way to score goals, that sack across to that sort of back post area for Havertz could work in this game. But if he's not available, obviously, then he won't be scoring that sort of goal. But we haven't seen Arsenal, have we? They're playing tonight, aren't they? So we don't quite know what they're like at the moment.
I think that's an important point to say, is this is game week 18 data. We've not included the game week 19 data in here, by the way. We've not, because there's some missing. So we've already got we're up to date for 18, but I didn't include 19 data in these matchups. So just as long as people are aware. Question from Thavinder Raj. Is Saka a long-term hold, in your opinion?
He probably is, because I don't want to keep harping on about it, but Salah and Son are going. If those two were still around and weren't going to international tournaments, I think there's an argument to get rid. His underlying numbers are not probably justifying his price right now. He's spending a lot more time out of the box in a wide area. You know what you get from him. You know, he's in a good team and he plays pretty much all the minutes. So you're getting that security. But in terms of who will offer you sort of double-figure returns more often, I think there's five better than him. But a bit like I said to you earlier about Trippier, I don't think if you've got him, you can't be looking to move him on, considering the other issues we're going to have at the minute, I don't think. If he was wildcarding now, I could see an argument for not owning him, for definite. But if you're not doing that, then I think you have to probably keep him.
Yeah, I mean, I own him, and I can't say I'm mad on him, but like you say, when you've got other issues you've got to deal with, then fair enough, I suppose. It's down the pecking order with respect to issues you've got to resolve. Righty-ho, let's keep going. Spurs against Bournemouth, mate. Now, how many goals is Solanke going to score here this week?
No, don't say that, because I've got eight attackers again. I've mentioned it already. And in terms of who's got the worst fixture, it's probably him. But you can't be benching Solanke based on the form he's in right now, and Tottenham won't have their first choice three centre backs. So you've got Bournemouth, you've got Tottenham who like to give up chances. You've got Bournemouth who have been quite good in front of goal lately, and Solanke's XGI, I think, is the best over the last 6-8 game weeks. If you don't own him now, I think I would still recommend getting him. I know Bournemouth it feels like you're jumping on the bandwagon too late, because he's been doing so well for X number of weeks now. And maybe you could argue that the fixture run is getting towards a point where it's getting a bit worse. But the numbers he's putting up for someone who's 7 million are just crazy right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were all worried it was too expensive, weren't we, at one stage. At the start of the season, we were saying, too expensive. I've owned him for a number of weeks now. I'm going to put these matchups up. This is really interesting, Craig. Bournemouth's matchup, 2.7 for attack against Spurs away. Spurs, 1.8. So Spurs also, this has got goals all over it. But Spurs zonals light up 4.1, 5.3, 4.7 left, centre, right. But only Bournemouth's right lights up at 3.8. But look at Bournemouth's big chances, 3.
It's got the potential for Bournemouth, for them to play the game like they played at Old Trafford the other week when they won 3-0. Because Tottenham will commit bodies forward. They will leave space in behind. Bournemouth have lots of pacey attackers, right, with Semenyo and Clivert runs in behind. You've got Sinisterra's actually putting up crazy good numbers off the bench as well for them. He's a really nice person to bring on for sort of the last 30 minutes of games. Tavernier's involved. So I don't doubt Bournemouth could hit Tottenham quite well on the counter-attack in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if they scored 3 goals in this game, Bournemouth. But just the way the game was set up for them with counter-attack, I think it's a good matchup in that way for them. They've got the players with the attributes and characteristics to sort of maximise those opportunities. But Tottenham, good as well, right? And we spoke about Bournemouth defence last time I was on, about maybe it was being underlooked at and were Bournemouth defenders options. They've obviously gone and kept a couple of clean sheets since then as well, but I'm still a bit hesitant. How good are they?
I've got a tricky one on the best this for my team this week. I've got Gusto, who's just left 8 points on the bench, and I've got Porro as well. Do I play Porro given that matchup?
Well, I'll be playing both of them, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Porro is one of those. He's just got any given game week, he could score just the way he plays.
Yeah.
He always feels like he's just someone you play every week, regardless of the fixture. A bit like the way you'd view a Trent or a Trippier. You just play them every week.
So who wouldn't you play then out of Trent, Trippier, Saliba, Porro and Gusto this week?
Is that what you've got?
Yes.
I'd bench Trippier, I think. I'd play Trent, Porro and Gusto, I think.
Yeah. Bench Trippier.
You don't play the centre-back, especially in an away game.
And bench Trippier away at...
That's probably what I would do, I think.
I suppose that Arsenal game, I can't really call too much either. So the only problem is Arsenal's EO for defence is quite high, isn't it? It's quite high. They're quite highly owned. So,
yeah. I'll be playing two of them, Chris, now I've told you to put Saliba third bench. I'll be playing...
So much for asking you to navigate. Anyway. Okay, so you would bench, if in my position, you would bench Trippier and Saliba.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Ignatius says Trippier's half dead anyway. Well, yeah, I don't know. He's done all right for me. I owned him very, very early. He's gone off the boil a bit now, Ignatius. I tend to agree with you. Okie dokie. Liverpool against Newcastle. Now, I'd love it. Love it. if there were some goals in this one, quite frankly, because I own at this moment in time 3 Newcastle players and 3 Liverpool.
No, two Liverpool.
I got rid of Darwin. So, but I own Trent and Salah, and I own Trippier, Gordon, and at the moment, did I sell Callum Wilson? I'm going to sell Callum Wilson. That's who's disappearing this week, I think, for me, because I got that pissed off when Isak started. And of course, they won a penalty, and I was like, oh, Callum Wilson! And I was like, oh, it's not on the pitch. Balls.
Anyone's own Chelsea assets were like that yesterday. I think their first four first choice penalty takers were all off the pitch when he got that penalty, and then Madueke ended up taking it. But if you owned Enzo, Palmer, Nkunku, any of those players would have been ahead of him in the penalty taking stakes, and they're all off the pitch when Chelsea got one.
I know, it's just a complete killer, isn't it? Just a complete killer. What's your take on this game whilst I just get the matchups ready, mate?
In normal circumstances, I think this would be tight. But it all hinges, I think, right now on how you view Newcastle. Obviously, away they've been poor for a few weeks. In general, they've been poor for a few weeks because their strategy and the way they like to play is so reliant on energy and press that as soon as one or two players can't maintain the higher levels, then the whole system kind of falls apart. And that's where they've been struggling lately, I think. But I think they've got decent rest, actually, before this game. For Newcastle standards of late, they've played a lot of games with not a lot of rest in between, given European involvement, Carabao Cup involvement. It feels like they've been playing like every 2-3 days. This time, they've actually got about a week off, I think, between when they lost to Forest in this game. But played those first, weren't they, against Forest on Boxing Day, and now they're last in this game week.
Yeah, it's 2nd of January, this game. So, New Year's Day late. Obviously, these are Dubai times, what you're seeing on the screen for me. Yeah. So that's New Year's Day late.
So is that enough time for Newcastle to get enough rest and recovery and energy back into their squad? If it is, then I don't think that this... I'm not saying Liverpool won't win, but I don't think... You could easily see the way Newcastle are currently playing, predictions of Liverpool winning this like 3-0 or something. Considering how bad Newcastle, I don't think it'll be like that. I think we might get a bit more of a gauge of sort of an older Newcastle type performance in this one. A few players might be back as well, Joe Linton and players like that, who are quite important to the way they play. So this will be tighter than I think a lot of people think.
You're saying tighter than these matchups suggest as well, then, because Liverpool's matchup's 3.7. It's the best of the week. 4.8 left, 4.9 centre, 3.8 right. 2.3 XG matchup, 2.8 big chances, 7.8 shots on target, 12.4 shots in the box, and 2.9 headers. And Newcastle is neutral at best, or red at worst, all the way across. So I have to say, I am starting to think whether it's time to start moving some of these Newcastle assets on. Callum Wilson, for sure, is going to go.
Yeah.
The issue is who for? It's almost like, do I leave it another week or, you know, and bench him? I'm even contemplating benching him this week and playing, and then maybe seeing if Nkunku comes out of the woodwork, because he's the player who I really, really like the look of. Chelsea's run is looking for, there's a good run of fixtures for Chelsea coming up. And if he starts, I think he's the sort of player I really like to own, because he'll be relatively lowly owned. If I can get on him early, then that might be a nice little differential for me as well, because I already...
You might get a leak on that, right, as well? Their first fixture, aren't they? You might get a leak on Chelsea's starting lineup.
Yeah. So that might be worth a consideration. So if he starts, that might be my move, provided I'm actually anywhere near a phone or actually remotely interested enough to be able to make a transfer. Because quite frankly, I just tend to make my transfers early and just like for Boxing Day, I just made him on Christmas Eve. I'm just like, right, glass of wine. You know what I mean? It's like, who cares, you know? But it'll be interesting, this, I think. You know, Salah against Livramento, Stewie's saying, maybe. You know, not sure that's good. Well, Salah's been... I don't know. What's your view on Salah? I said it the other week. Is he getting a bit nervy about getting injured for this AFCON? He doesn't seem to be the player he was to me. But maybe it's just the where he's playing these days.
I think his underlying numbers are still quite good. I kind of feel like it depends who's in the team with him. I thought it suited him against Burnley with Harvey Elliott in the team, because Harvey Elliott naturally drifted out to the right, and that allowed Salah to become almost a second striker next to Darwin, and Ed Gakpo in the team as well. Szoboszlai, I don't think, gives Salah quite the same fluidity in terms of where he plays. I think the gist of it is he's still taking penalties, and his underlying numbers are still very good. So I wouldn't sell him for this game. I'm in an R in. If I thought Haaland would be back, I'd be selling Salah in this game to accommodate Haaland up front. But so the fact we're not getting Haaland back means I'm happy probably to keep Salah and just play him in this. Is it against Livramento or Dan Burn? We're playing against one of those two, right?
Well, either, but shouldn't be a problem for him, really, should they? I mean, Livramento might be a bit trickier, actually, a bit piercier. The old tin man. He should rip Dan Burn another one, shouldn't he? Or you'd expect him to.
Well, he's got another, say, Burn, Botman, these sort of players, quite a decent amount of time injured, lacking in match practice and general minutes and training. They've got a week. It's how much weight you put on the fact they've got a week off, what that means for getting their players back available, what that means to their energy levels, what that means for their ability to prepare properly for it. It's an unknown. I'm going to predict that I think that will serve Newcastle well, and therefore they'll keep it tight. But I completely understand that other people might not see it that way.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Right, we'll just get this last match up then. So West Ham against Brighton, Craig, whilst I'm getting lined up here. First of all, do you own any of these? Have you got any West Ham or Brighton assets these days? Or
no. Nope.
And do they interest you?
No, probably.
Okay.
I don't quite know where I stand on Pascal Gross. I think he's one of those that is on my shortlist for when Salah and Son go. To be fair, Jared Bowen's also on my shortlist for when Salah and Son go. But Bowen will have a positional change when that happens, because Kudus will go to AFCON as well. So does that impact him? And West Ham just generally don't create enough chances. Now, the ones they do create, Bowen, frustratingly for me at least, seems to be taking one more often than not right now. But I can't get behind a team that doesn't have that many shots in a game and you're relying on sort of a really clinical finisher to keep taking the chances. And that's what you're going to be looking at in this game here. Brighton are going to have all the ball, dominate all the territory, and then West Ham are going to try and sort of break forward on a semi-counter attack and see what happens. And they could score two or three goals using that playing style here. We obviously can't trust Brighton to keep a clean sheet. We're still waiting after 19, 20 game weeks for one to finally happen, and we're still waiting. So you can't predict them to keep one. I don't especially rate West Ham defence. They were carved apart by Liverpool in the Carabao Cup. I didn't think they was particularly good in the last. I know they beat Man United 2-0, but the goals were semi-fortunate, I thought. I think they're overperforming a league position is kind of a bit of a false economy for me for West Ham. I don't think they're as good as what the league position sort of suggests they are. Another quite a hard one to call, because can Brighton make their dominance count and will West Ham get chances on the counter-attack and be clinical with them? Both of those things could happen. I think Brighton probably should win this, though, maybe 2-1 or something. But again, the interest from these two teams are both midfielders, and right now I wouldn't be looking to buy a midfielder. And if I was, I'd probably prioritise Foden over anyone in this game. So yeah, it's a wait, I think, for a bit more. If Bowen scores a hat-trick or something in this, then obviously he's firmly on the radar to replace Salah or Son next week. But I won't be getting him in now, I don't think.
It's an interesting one, because it might suggest Bowen more of assisting sort of potential this week. Not an awful lot going through the centre or the left, but good matchup on the right, 4.2, 0.9. But look, I mean, the matchups aren't great. Brighton's are awful. 3.2 headers for West Ham. So maybe there's something there. But Brighton, you know, the Brighton are a pale shadow of the past in many senses with respect to how they've been playing away from home. Because, I mean, obviously they've been ravaged by injury. And like you say, probably the only player of any interest right now is Pascal Gross, because he's now sitting up there as the talisman for them. Clearly, because there's no one else, quite frankly, apart from probably Mitoma, who's a bit like a busted flush right now, quite frankly.
The issue with Gross is you don't know game to game where he's going to play. One time he'll play as a number 10, then he'll be a number 8, then he'll be left back the game after that. And when you've got Bowen as a midfielder playing centre forward, or you could have Gross as a midfielder playing left back. I know which one I would rather have. Then it's,
yeah,
puts you up,
yeah,
right? You can't trust he's going to be in a reliable position. And there are enough good midfielders around that you need to take that risk, especially when Brighton rotates so much as well. They're the team that are going to be annoying in the next couple of weeks. I think their fixtures, if there was a ticker for sort of the next six game weeks, I imagine they might be top of it. Their fixtures are very good, Brighton, coming up. But is there a player we can rely upon to be of use in that time? Seamus Superland's not coming back a bit quicker. Maybe we could punt him for a couple of weeks.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I think what we'll do now is, that's the end of the matchup. So what we'll do is, first of all, if you haven't given this streamer a like, please do. We'd love you to also subscribe if you really enjoy it. I mean, it's just me and Craig this week, but you'll also, Gabe, FPL Lens, Nima's also here quite often, and also Lucy, an FPL teacher. So yeah, I mean, we've got lots of very interesting and quite unique content. So if you like what you see, do give us a like, do it a subscribe. And if you really, really like us, you can always become a hauler as well and get a little bit more information through the Discord channel as well. So anyway, let's keep going. And there's the summaries, Craig. So that's just the summaries of what we've been talking about. Again, they've been all up on the screen, but I think they're very clear to me. The matchups which jump out to me are Aston Villa against Burnley, are Liverpool against Newcastle, and Manchester City against Sheffield United. They're the ones that really jump out this week for me. yeah, I think they're the key ones. I think the game which is most interesting to me is Bournemouth against Spurs, both attacks over defence. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really interesting one. That could be a good game to watch, I think.
Who are you captaining here, Chris, based on all of this? Salah?
I'll show you in a minute. But do you know what? Look, don't captain who I captain, because I don't think I'm going to captain return in about 6 weeks. whether I follow the metric or whether I don't, it don't make a bloody difference. I mean, probably Salah. I think probably Salah at home, I'd probably have to. But I'll tell you what, you know, there's obviously Watkins there. You've even got Cole Palmer. coming back in fit and healthy, coming back in to go up against Luton. That'd be an interesting one as well. But anyway, the five-week matchups, I think, is something I want to spend a bit more time on very quickly. If we look at fixture difficulty, Craig, Manchester City are creeping back in. They've not been there for a few weeks, and that's interesting. Chelsea are top at 12.8, but then you've got Aston Villa, then Manchester City, then Newcastle, and Liverpool, a level there. So very, very interesting. There's five teams standing out, teams that are not standing out, really, at Arsenal. Not really. And you mentioned Brighton's fixture difficulty for them running fixtures. It's not really there. Defensive-wise, Arsenal stands out. So I think your double Arsenal call is the right call, if you ask me. I really like that. Zonal's really Liverpool, Spurs. Of course, we're going to have players leaving the teams very soon. So a lot of these Zonals might all go up the Swanee River because of all, you know, important players leaving teams. They're from, you know. So this is going to be making a lot more caveats with respect to these Zonals going forwards than really we're looking at right now. XG, Chelsea, then Liverpool, Manchester City and Newcastle. Big chances, you're talking about Manchester City and Chelsea. I'm just going to very, very quickly here. Liverpool shots on target, Liverpool shots in the box, Brighton headers with Arsenal, Liverpool, Forest. If you were to pick any bones out of this, what jumps out at you?
Yeah, Man City. Man City mid is going to be essential when you sell Salah and Son. Whether it's Foden, whether it's Doku, I think he's back training, the same as De Bruyne. He's their difference maker, their X factor in terms of being a bit different. So I think he'll play a lot of games, Doku. And he's one of those ones. If you're trying to break down a deep block, they'll give him the ball to try and dribble at someone. I think it's worth a Man City punt. Chelsea, it's Nkunku, right? He's the big punt that's coming up, I think, if we feel like he's going to get enough minutes.
Yeah, okay. The next slide I'm going to put up is the talisman slide. And there was a player at the top. I put a note in the in our little group chat about it. The player at the top, I'm not sure whether my zonals or whether everything's had a bit, it's had a bit too much turkey. But it's actually Enzo. How the fuck's going on here? But he's got 51% expected involvement when he's on the pitch.
Yeah, was there a problem?
But why? I don't get it. No, there's no problem with it. It should be right. It should be right. Now, look, I'm gonna unpick this thing. It might be completely pissed. It might have had too much turkey. So we can just ignore it. But look who's next. Solanke. Still sat up there. Heavily involved.
His numbers are too good for his price. You have to have him, I think, now. I don't like using the word essential in this game, but he's rapidly becoming it for me. Whether you have him as a second striker or a third striker is up for debate, I think. But I think you have to have him if you haven't got him.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you look to, if you go on to, Hall or anything like that, I think you'll find Enzo's numbers are really, really good, actually, between me and you. Gross, interesting one here. 39% expected involvement, 86% actual. Look at that overperformance. Overperformance, significant overperformance. So does that tell you a story that Gross maybe is overperforming right now and maybe isn't such a good pick as well? He's sat there fourth. You've got Gibbs White, Alvarez, Trent Alexander-Arnold is the first defender there in about seventh place as a talisman. Very interesting, huh?
There's a lot of interest. Like Archer's really high as well. United, but I wouldn't have expected him to be sort of as high on this list.
I think the key there is look how low Sheffield United's team XG is, 5.47. But he's got quite a chunk of it, 2.13. So, I think realistically, I'd be looking at like the top six or seven. Cunha there for Wolves is still there. He's been doing quite well. But I think Trent Alexander-Arnold is interesting, as is Gibbs-White. And clearly, Solanke's probably as good a talisman as you can find in the game right now.
Yeah, he's the one to get. Gross, I say there's reservations around his position. Gibbs White, I haven't seen enough from Nottingham Forest under a new manager to know exactly where he's going to play in the system. Trent, I still think, is expensive. I know he's getting attacking returns, but for 8.4, you kind of need a clean sheet sort of every other week, I think, to sort of justify that cost. Will he provide that? I'm not convinced. And the fixtures are getting worse, I think. So, Cunha, you've got... Yep. You've got Huang going away. Is that going to impact his involvement, or is that going to make him stronger? We don't know, do we? The impact of no Huang on Cunha. I can pick faults and be devil's advocate with most of these near the top, to be honest, apart from Solanke. He's the only one of that top lot, I think.
Absolutely. And I mean, and again, this is the last six game weeks, which we're actually using. I'm not using anything more than the last, because I think that's the most important thing to do with this, is to look at a consistent chunk of data. And Watkins has dropped down there a bit. And I think we feel that, don't we? We feel that he's not there as the way he was right now.
These are two quiet games, right? I'd say that the team at the moment isn't progressing the ball to really suit him. He's on the periphery of the game a bit more than maybe he was a month ago. We're a couple of players away now from being back to a normal squad again. I say the suspensions have been served and the short-term injuries have sort of been overcome. So I still think his underlying numbers aren't horrendous. I still think
he's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere in my team. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, play a bit of devil's advocate, really. But I mean, look, it's an interesting point that, you know, for the first time in a while, I'm looking at Watkins and going, ooh, do I keep Solanke? I'm going to bring Haaland back in. Do I keep Solanke or do I keep Watkins?
If Haaland comes back, Haaland and Solanke, the two strikers you have, and the third one you play around with, do you have Watkins?
I tend to agree with you. Yeah, I tend to agree with you there, because I think that's how I can keep Trent and I can still do what I want with my midfield by having that slightly cheaper second striker. So, I tend to agree with you. I think Watkins might disappear before too long. Anyway, should we have a look at the captaincy metric very quickly? It's 1 hour 12 in, so let's...
I don't have a captain this week yet, Chris. I'm interested. I haven't settled on a captain yet.
Well, I mean, look, we'll see, but I wouldn't use this. It's shit. Anyway, here we go. 3-2-1. It's fucking rubbish this year. It doesn't matter whether I follow it or not. It's still, well, I think it's me. I think it's just me these days. Well, anyway, we used to have a successful captaincy metric, everybody. but now I'm not sure we do. I think we just got the variance, nearly as much variance as there is going on in the darts quite now. I'm not quite sure whether you saw how many 180s there were, mate, but that's a different story.
Okay, I haven't looked.
I hope you had a high number.
I did, yeah.
But there's excellent. You might have a chance then. I didn't see what it finished with, but it was in the 20s. Right. Captaincy metric. Salah is top. The numbers are slightly low. The reason they're low is there's no NetXG numbers in there. So it's not taking... So ignore the number. The number on the right-hand side, ignore it. Just look at the order. Okay? You've got Salah and, interestingly here... Salah's haul numbers are down, his return numbers are down, his point numbers are down recently, but his matchups are very good. The fixture is very good, the XGI is very good, the big chances is good, but not as good as Solanke, and the zonals are higher as well. And that just pips Solanke into second place, but Solanke's numbers are better with respect to past, and he's virtually the same for his predictions. That is super interesting, given the fact Solanke is away at Spurs. I put Haaland in there, but he'll fall away. But I put him in there because if he was fit and if he played, he'd be top. Okay? That's clear.
Yeah.
If he played, he'll be top. And if he plays more than 70 minutes, he'd be top. He probably won't play. Then we've got some really interesting numbers. Got Kulusevski and Son for Spurs because Bournemouth... And then you've got Watkins, and then you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold sat there again. You know, is Trent Alexander-Arnold primed for a double return here? Should I captain Trent Alexander-Arnold? Bored, man. I want to swim. I want to do a swim like this philosophy. Or am I diving into hot water?
Yeah, you need him to keep a clean sheet if you're going to. If you put an armband on him, I wouldn't put a particularly high weighting on Liverpool clean sheet against Newcastle, I don't think. So for that, you might tend to agree with you. The interesting one, so I was thinking about captaining Alvarez for obvious, it's not exactly groundbreaking reason. He's playing at home to the worst team in the league. He's a lot lower down than I thought. But is that purely because, is there an expectation he's going to play in a different position? If we knew now Haaland was out, would Alvarez, would that number go up?
No, well, that's the problem with Alvarez. You can see it, and I've moved across to the actual spreadsheet now. You can see it. The reason for Alvarez is down is nothing to do with his expected. It's all to do with what he's been doing. He's had no holes. He's had no holes. His points are probably wrong. I think that's probably incorrect. There might be a mistake in there. I'll double check that. But he's, even then, he's still low. And I think that tells us, that tells a bit of a story there. I can see why you think, well, he might be a better captaincy than Captain Shout.
I think he had five shots on target against Everton last night. Again, it was an away game. Maybe City do better in away games, but he's got his potential. He's just come from the Club World Cup, got two goals in the final, then was heavily involved last night.
His numbers, I think there may be a number, there might be a mistake on his points, but I think so that's going to push him higher. So let's just, I'll adjust that. Let me just put that to 65 or something like that. Takes him up a bit. If he had a haul, he had five shots. Let's say he had a haul, takes him to, 78, takes him to 68, takes him to fourth. So it probably takes him to the best. He's still behind Solanke, but he probably puts him as the best Manchester City option for captaincy, if indeed you own him. Yeah.
So he's my chosen one at the minute. I'm not against captaining Watkins. I do think the Burnley matchup's good for him. It's just, say, Villa are struggling for supply a little bit.
It's this problem. His returns are down, look.
Yeah.
So, because his returns are down. So he's not really doing an awful lot. And I mean, the only other players you've got, I'm just looking for some minutes issues. You know, if Richarlison's minutes are much higher, takes him up to 60. Who else have we got? Bowen down here. He's fit, I think. So that's not been updated, has it? So that, let's say that takes him back to 90. It pushes him up a bit, but nothing much. So I think, look, I think there's not a lot there. I think it's pretty much a shootout between, I would say, the hordes will go Salah or Watkins. The hordes? And maybe, the hordes would go Salah for sure, I think. Salah at home. I think Solanke away at Bournemouth is not a bad shout at all. I don't think I've got the balls to do it.
I definitely haven't. I'm going to have to stick with my sort of interpretation of Liverpool not going mad against Newcastle. I think you have to back your gut sometimes. And so I don't think Liverpool will score that many in this game. So I'm going to go somewhere else. Alvarez or Son probably for me at the minute, I think.
Should we start captaining the guy second on the metrics? It'd be an interesting experiment. I would like, I'd captain anyone other than the one who's at the top of the metric right now. Stevie. I don't know what to do with it anymore. In fact, quite frankly, it's what I actually put my reputation on at the start, from when I started doing YouTube. I mean, quite frankly, I mean, it's tough. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of good captaincy options this season have blanked. Can you? How many times?
A bit of variance, Mariner. That's all it is. It's a bit of variance.
A bit. feels like a lot.
I'm being nice to you. I'm being nice to you.
Feels like a lot to me. Anyway, right. Let's have some questions, shall we? Whilst we're messing around, we'll keep all the thank yous, pleases, and this, that, and the other for another week, because I think we want to try and get out of here before too long. It's a little shortened version today. Midfield. This is the first one. Was from Thingamabob. Who are the best midfielders under the 6 million bracket? Iwobi, Palmer, and Gibbs White was suggested. I'd suppose that he suggested. Will we see cheaper options like Elango and Garnacho creep into those rankings? Underlyings are okay. If you were to put those under 6 millions into order, who would you be your top three right now?
For different reasons, I'd probably say Brennan Johnson one. We didn't mention him on the pod, but I think his minutes are going to be a bit better, obviously, with Son going. So I think he's probably first. I would then, depending on if you want to start them every week, it probably is Elise, I think, is high, just because he's talisman. Palace's fixtures aren't super amazing, though, but does that really matter? He scored against Man City the other week, didn't he? So maybe you can just play him every week. And if you're looking to transition to three up front, which I would recommend to do, I'd probably go Garnacho third, and you can use him as your eighth attacker. I'd probably put those three as the three I'd be looking at.
Let me just put this back up. I don't know if you can see that. Can you see that? Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, obviously, Enzo. It's missed, like I said. Gibbs White really is the one who probably jumps out. 60% involvement, actual 44% expected. But look, this is the problem with Forest. Again, their matchups are not. So this might be a player who's a bit talismanic, but he unfortunately is in a team that is, it's a little bit in flux right now, isn't it, with Nuno. So not entirely sure. Sarabia, interestingly, is there as well. Tavernier from Bournemouth. And that's an interesting one because, you know, they do have decent matchups going forwards. Then you've got Iwobi, McGinn, and then you've got Garnacho a bit further down. But I think that's because his expected involvement, Garnacho, is only 26%, Craig.
But his actual 40%. Fulham, by the way, now.
Anyway, it's fine. Don't worry about that. It's I can soon change that. It's when did he move? About how long ago? Pre-season.
Yeah.
It's not. Let's turn that off the screen right now. That's my database. Though. That's my database, which is wrong. Elise is over. Is he over 6 million?
I don't think. I thought he was 5 point something. As he's gone up.
I wonder why. Let me just have a quick look.
Let me just check, see if he's bought his prices.
No, it's 5.8, but I think I've got, wonder why I've got him down as that low.
It's a struggle if you
think I know. I think I know why. Yeah. Oh no, I'm not entirely sure. No. I'll have to run his numbers. I think there might be an error in the system for him. So that'd be worthwhile looking at. But yes, I think that might be. I think I might have found it. There we go. Actually, 2.67 is Elise. So he is by a distance the talisman at Palace.
Yeah.
As we said.
Yeah,
and that probably puts him quite high up. If I just take the filter off for Palace, and obviously there's all sorts of crap going to appear here now, so just bear with me.
He's one of those sort of punty upside players that no one's really going to go to. One, because he plays for Palace, and two, their fixtures aren't good. But he's such a good
footballer. He's third there. So yeah, good shout. Actually, there. That's just shows how. Unfortunately, my data's a bit. It probably needs a bit more turkey. But yeah, interestingly, he's had another return, hasn't he? And remember, the data already goes up to last week. So he's had another return this week. So is Elise your pick? It's an interesting one. The only thing I would say is...
Man City should be trying to sign to play on as their right forward. He's the ideal fit for them, I think, to...
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Okay. Right, so anyway, there's the gremlins in my data being shown as usual. Probably half of the reason why there's so many gremlins in my FPL game right now. Let's have a quick look at some more questions. Sheffield United. Sheffield have weaknesses for defences against inverted winners. Will you sell Palmer? Will you sell Palmer for Bernardo Silva? No. Other midfielders were Bowen, Salah, Son and Saka. You see, he's got Salah and Son, he's got to sell, right?
Yeah.
So why sell Palmer?
Yeah, no, Palmer's a season hold at that price. I'm guessing he's had him a while as well. Probably the best value player in the game, realistically. You can't sell him.
No, I tend to agree with you.
I'd rather sell Saka than Palmer. If you're that desperate to get Bernardo this week, I'd rather wait a week, personally, and just get him instead of Salah or Son next week. I already said I'd get a Man City player. Just wait a week or sell one of those to a week early if you have to.
Question from Stewie Bryan. Buy Foden or Bowen for the next three game weeks? That's an interesting one.
Foden for me.
I think I tend to agree with you. Yeah. Okay. So let's have a look. Any more questions? Can you see any more questions in the chat? I'm not quite sure I can. Sarabia with Neto back, who will take the set pieces. That's probably going to be I think Neto on the. Is he? I don't know. I don't know enough about Wolves, really. We need some
I'm
Wolves
not sure
experts.
If they'll both
here,
play. I don't think it's.
No.
It might be one or the other of those two.
Right.
Neto will definitely play. I imagine Neto will be on them, I would think.
Just a general comment from Ignatius. Sala all against Livermento, against Solanke, against Ben Davis. He makes a very interesting point there. I wonder.
It's not just Ben Davis, is it? Who's going to be the other centre?
No.
It might be Emerson Royal with him, mightn't it? It could be those two back at centre-back again.
We've got a strange one here. I'm not quite sure whether... I think there's clearly some emojis being used, but I'm going to read this out because I think it's funny. FPL DG Boy 88. Spurs without injured Romero. Colon, face hyphen fuchsia hyphen poop hyphen shape. I think... It's coming there. I love it. Brilliant. I think I just basically made shit. In other words,
they're not good, are they? They're not good without those two.
We've got 4 minutes, guys. If you get your questions in, any more? Here we go. There's one from Vivek. Would you sell Palmer for Foden this week? No.
Palmer's the last player I would buy this week.
Yes, just FOMO on that. But I think, look, Vivek, who else have you got in your team? I mean, you know, if you're worried about Foden, maybe dive off someone else. I mean, you know, you've got who else have we got in there? You know, have you got any other players who's going to have to take out next? Yeah. Yeah. Now, here's the interesting one from Kate. This is the Foden train just starting up on Net that hole. Would you sell Martinelli for Foden, says K7?
No.
Would you not? Do you know what? I would be tempted to do that because I don't think Arsenal's matchups are that good. And I think Manchester City's are. And I really like Foden. I wouldn't be objectionable about that. But maybe I'm the wrong person to ask.
I can see the logic. You've just got too many possible transfers waiting for you in week. I would be rolling a transfer unless I was selling someone who wasn't playing this week, I think.
There's love for it. There's love for this. TS editor, K7, Marty is an easy sell. Ignatius, Martinelli is so useless, bro.
You're asking to take hits, aren't you? You're going to be taking hits in the next couple of game weeks. If you're selling Martinelli for Foden... You're basically forcing yourself to take a hit in the next couple of game weeks.
Yeah.
I think,
good point. I mean, look, let's try and keep ourselves calm here. I think realistically, if you're taking players out right now, you're taking players out who are either dropped, who are not playing, and you need players. You've got injuries or this, that, and the other, or players like Callum Wilson, like I've got, who quite frankly, I'm not happy with at all. And maybe I see some upside, but apart from that, I only own Salah. I don't own Son, so I've only got to get Salah out. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to kill me. It's not going to kill me. So I've got time. So I can see, I could possibly make a transfer this week and not worry too much about taking hits. I've generally speaking got a relatively fit team.
Game week 21, if you've only got one free transfer, you've got Salah to sell, Son to sell, and then we hear Haaland's coming back. You're going to want to make three moves, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, you are. So I think if you've got both of those, if you've got both Salah and Son, you probably want two free transfers two free transfers going into next week. Would you agree?
Certainly, if you want Haaland back, because I don't think he'll be back for next week either. But obviously, we don't know. But should we get wind that he's back, everyone's going to want to get him in the first opportunity, especially having freed up money from selling Salah. So you're either going to be benching Son for a week and then maybe dealing with it, or looking at a -8 if you've only got one free transfer. It depends what your appetite for risk and stuff is. If you think Foden's going to get 20 points this week, then who am I to say don't get him in? But just be aware of what might be coming up in the next weeks in terms of transfers. And that's those three moves without any injuries. You might get an injury or a suspension or something as well, mightn't you? And then you're looking at -12s and possible wild cards and all sorts. Is it worth it?
No, but I've been hitting around like hell. I've got to a point where I've virtually given up. But anyway, there we go. Craig, 1 hour 29. I think it's time for us to make a move. Thank you so much for joining us. It's got dark in the UK since you started doing the show. Yeah. It's pitch black here.
It's not that late. It's only about 4:30, but you wouldn't know it from looking behind me.
Well, there you go. See, I'm still a bit sunburnt, so it's still quite warm even in here. I should have put the AC on earlier, but anyway, there we go. Thank you so much, mate. Thanks for sparing the time for us. I do appreciate it. You've got your Christmas lights on outside now, even as well. Yeah, even more festive.
I think my wife's in the next room. I think she might have just heard your comment about the darkness. I think she's pushed the button on our Alexa and all the lights
are coming. Do me a favour. Just ask Alexa for some FPL points for Mariner, can you? She'd probably tell you stop to be so stupid. And on that note, let's bugger off. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to all you haulers as well. We'll be back in the new year. God knows when. God knows whether we get any points. And hopefully, perhaps a New Year's resolution. We maybe have a New Year's resolution next week, because apparently Gabe's missing again next week. So we better not do a philosophy. We'll do our New Year's resolutions. There we go. FPL New Year's resolutions. How about that?
Sounds good. Sounds good.
All right, mate. Thank you so much. Take care, haulers, and we'll see you soon. And let's hope you get some green arrows. More to the point, let's hope I do. Take care. See you soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.